Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanzan, Washington, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Friday, January 7, 2022. Some UN local staff in Jonglei State go on strike.
We have locked the gates and we are not opening until they tell us substantial information about our payment.
And what is the future of Sudan without the former Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok?
The military lacks legitimacy domestically, and it's going to continue to face resistance for as long as it's in power.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Dozens of former employees of the World Food Program have blocked the entrance to a humanitarian hub in Bor on Friday. The workers who are protesting delay of their 3 months' salary blocked the gates to a compound hosting WFP, International Office for Migration, United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, and other UN agencies. The UN Resident Coordinator's office in Jonglei State says many UN flights were affected by the protest. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Hundreds of local World Food Program workers locked the UN humanitarian hub in Bor today to protest the delay getting paid for their work. Moses Kwale, local WFP worker, says he and his colleagues are unhappy about the delay of their salaries for about 3 months without any clear explanations. He says UN workers walk off the job today and lock the gates to pressure the UN.
We have locked the gates and we are not opening until they tell us substantial information about our payment. We have been working and our families are suffering. Then why work? So we will open only when they give clear information that can be trusted. So no movement in and out.
Rebecca Achul, a cleaner with the UN agency in Jonglei State, says the WFP should pay her so she can buy food for her family.
We are not doing something bad. What we want is our right. If WFP is here to support the vulnerable people, then why give deaths here to the workers who are helping it do their works with ease and without problem?
Efforts to reach Martha Ngola, who heads the field office for the World Food Program in Bor, as our office assistant said, she is not authorized to speak to the media on behalf of WFP. Torma Jungwe, the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission Director in Jonglei State, says he is aware of the strike. Gwe says many UN flights were cancelled and some humanitarian activities were affected. Tuong Majuk, the Jonglei State Acting Governor, says he has dispatched security forces to convene the workers to open their gates.
The compound is used for so many UN agencies and not only for World Food Programme, because they were protesting of World Food Program, laymen of the World Food to give money to the contractor. And that's why they closed that one. So we told them it is not the right to close the main gate for the old agencies not to operate. I sent security forces this morning to go and talk to them.
The acting governor says the actions of WFP workers is harming humanitarian services in the state. He says the striking workers should reopen the gates and monitor their case of not being paid in a peaceful manner through dialogue with their employer. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
From Jonglei State, we move to Sudan. Sudanese Professional Association, the body leading the protest, issued a statement urging citizens to take part in protests in Khartoum and other cities to demand a civilian rule. Earlier on Thursday, communications and internet services on mobile phones were disrupted in Khartoum ahead of a planned protest. An advisor to military leader Abdel Fattah al-Burhan said the armed forces would not allow anyone to plunge Sudan into what he calls chaos, labeling the protest as physical, psychological, and mental drain on the country. VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi discussed the latest development with Joseph Saigli, director of research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies.
The military has been using this pretext of a crisis and instability as the justification for their coup. However, we should keep in mind the protests in Sudan have been remarkably peaceful and well organized. In fact, all of the reports of violence that we have heard have been of the military against these protesters. So, you know, the bottom line is that the public is fed up with the military-led government. This was true under Bashir, and it's true under Burhan. And the military lacks legitimacy domestically, and it's going to continue to face resistance for as long as it's in power.
Senator Chris Coons, a member of the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee, said Hamdok's resignation cements the October 25th military coup and exposes the intentions of Sudan's military leaders to cling to power and continue to sabotage the country's transition toward democracy. Is that a fair assessment of the latest events in Sudan?
I think it is a fair assessment. And I would go further to say that it was the October 25th coup that laid bare the military's true ambition to retain power and derail a genuine democratic transition in Sudan. Now, bringing back Hamdok as prime minister was solely a fig leaf to try and obscure the fact that this was a military government. The same holds now when the military is in discussions to bring in another civilian prime minister. You know, we need to be clear that it isn't who is prime minister that matters. It's who's controlling the broader government, who's managing the respective institutions. And you know, the reality right now is that it's the military junta that is doing that.
The United States, United Kingdom, Norway, and the European Union issued a warning to Sudan's military leaders, calling on them to recommit to the country's democratic transition or risk international action, and warned against the military taking unilateral action to appoint a new prime minister and a cabinet that did not involve a broad range of civilian stakeholders. Would that be enough to deter the Sudanese coup leaders?
Well, this is a very important message from the international community. However, it will need to be reinforced by actions. There will need to continue to be no recognition of the coup leaders as the government, no financial support or debt relief. The junta should be denied access to the sovereign accounts of the Sudanese state. And there should be sanctions on individuals and institutions that are supporting the coup. This includes accountability for the deaths of the protesters since the protests have been going on, as well as investigations into reports that the military has been diverting funds from the central bank into accounts controlled by the military. So from the point of the international community, it's not just a matter of appointing the prime minister. It's a matter of restoring genuinely independent institutions within Sudan and having civilian ministers for the respective government departments that can restore the democratic transition in Sudan.
The special representative of the UN Secretary General for Sudan, Volker Berthres, said the aspirations of the Sudanese people for a democratic path and completing the peace process should be the cornerstone of all efforts to solve the current crisis in Sudan. And he added that the UN Integrated Transition Assistance Mission in Sudan stands ready to facilitate this process. Is there a role for the UN to restore the transition to democracy in Sudan?
The UN has played, and I believe continues to play, a very important role in restoring the transition. It's a respected international entity that is dealing with both the political and diplomatic level engagements, as well as on the security side. It's seen as an honest broker that all sides can talk to and work out a way forward. And I think in this context, it's especially important that the UN continues to talk to and elevates its engagements with the civilian-led resistance movement, especially those actors with the forces for freedom and change that have been leading the push for reforms. I think only then will it have, you know, the credibility to reach a negotiated outcome that will be accepted by the street. I think the UN also has an important role to play in coordinating international actors, certainly those that are interested in seeing a democratic outcome, but also in terms of calling out those international actors that have been secretly supporting the military junta. and would, you know, would like to see the democratic transition derailed. I think in that way that the UN has an important role for accountability. So in the end, the UN plays a very valuable role in terms of granting recognition for any government. And so the UN needs to ensure that this recognition is reserved for a genuinely representative and legitimate government that will support the democratic transition. I think that's really the only way out where you're going to get popular support for a new government.
That's Joseph Segley, Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, speaking to VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi about the situation in Sudan. Ethiopia's government has dismissed a Human Rights Watch report that says authorities illegally detained, abused, and caused the forced disappearance of thousands of ethnic Tigrayans repatriated from Saudi Arabia. Gilmo Dawit reports from Addis Ababa.
Ethiopia's Ministry of Foreign Affairs on Thursday lashed out at the Human Rights Watch report that accuses the state of targeting ethnic Tigrayans recently repatriated from Saudi Arabia. The rights group's report accused authorities of detaining, abusing, and causing thousands of Tigrayans to effectively vanish in a sweep against illegal migrants. Ministry spokesman Dina Muti called the report unsubstantiated and an irresponsible move that aimed to discredit the government's effort to help citizens returned by Saudi authorities. "We have repatriated more than 40,000 Ethiopians from Saudi Arabia in just a couple of months, regardless of which ethnic group that they belong to," Mufti said, according to a transcript of the briefing. Ethiopia in January 2021 announced it had agreed with Saudi Arabia to repatriate 40,000 of its citizens detained in the country at a rate of 1,000 per day. Human Rights Watch reports Wednesday said 40% of returnees from November 2020 to June 2021 were Tigrayans. The report said from June to July, Saudi Arabia deported more than 30,000 Ethiopian citizens just as authorities were targeting ethnic Tigrayans. The group's refugee and migrant rights researcher Nadia Herdman said the Tigrayan returnees were detained in various parts of Ethiopia, beaten, and subjected to forced labor. Ethiopian authorities are prosecuting Tigrayans deported from Saudi Arabia by wrongfully detaining and forcibly disappearing them, Herdman said. Saudi Arabia should stop contributing to this abuse by ending the forced return of Tigrayans to Ethiopia and allowing them to seek asylum or resettlement in third countries. The rights groups also called on Ethiopian authorities to immediately release detained migrants and to stop profiling ethnic Tigrayans. The report was based on interviews Human Rights Watch conducted with 23 alleged victims of the abuse. Since the war broke out in November 2020, between Ethiopian federal authorities and those in Tigray region, the government has denied discriminating against or targeting ethnic Tigrayans. But reports from inside Ethiopia indicate authorities have subjected ethnic Tigrayans to arbitrary detentions, dismissal from official positions, and travel restrictions. Ethiopian government spokesperson Legese Tulu told Reuters news agency there was no ethnic-based prison facilities or places for deportees from other countries, but he acknowledged many Ethiopians were detained on suspicion of aiding what he called terrorists, the Ethiopian government's terms for the Tigray People's Liberation Front. The TPLF have long ruled the Tigray region and run the federal government for 3 decades until they were ousted from power in 2018. Foreign Ministry spokesman Mufti on Thursday said Ethiopia plans to send a committee of officials, religious leaders, and other stakeholders to Saudi Arabia to discuss measures for its citizens who remain in detention. Gilmo Dawit for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, Pope Francis encourages child adoptions. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is most special about you?
I don't like disappointing people because of my actions. The way it pained me when somebody has disappointed me, I think about the same pain that I will cause to someone whom I have disappointed.
I'm someone who is very friendly, and I can interact with different people without considering their conditions and their status.
One thing special about me, I love the way God has created me, and I love being myself. I don't need to disguise myself like somebody, or I don't need to put myself pretend like someone. I appreciate the way God has created me.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Pope Francis has called on childless couples to adopt children and is urging on institutions to make the process easier. He also condemned the practice of adopting pets instead of children, calling it a form of selfishness. Sabina Castelfranco reports from Rome.
In his first audience of the new year, Pope Francis stressed the importance of parenthood, especially when so many children have been orphaned in the world. He said every time a person takes on the responsibility of someone else's life, the person is exercising a form of parenthood. The Pope called on people not to fear choosing the path of adoption, saying it is among the highest forms of love and parenthood. How many children in the world, Pope Francis said, are waiting for someone to look after them, and how many couples would like to become parents but are unable for biological reasons? Adoption, he said, is a beautiful and generous act. The Pope said having a child is always a risk, whether that child is biologically one's own or adopted. Rejecting parenthood, he said, is an even greater risk. He said the problem is not only the number of orphans, but the fact many people do not want to have children, a situation he described as a demographic winter. The Pope said many couples have no children because they do not want them, or they choose to have only one, but then have two dogs, two cats. Yes, the Pope said, dogs and cats take the place of children. This may make people laugh, he said, but it is the reality. Pope Francis said people who choose to have pets instead of children are manifesting a form of selfishness. In a statement, Massimo Comparotto, the president of Italy's International Organization for the Protection of Animals, OIPA, was critical of the Pope's comments. He said, "It is evident that for Francis, animal life is less important than human life. But those who feel that life is sacred love life beyond species." The Pope urged institutions to make it simpler for couples to adopt children and provide more assistance to family that do so. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
And now for some sports news. After multiple delays due to poor preparations and the global COVID-19 pandemic, the 33rd edition of the Africa's top soccer tournament, the African Cup of Nations, kicks off this weekend in Cameroon. The tournament will feature 24 African countries represented by some of the best soccer players in the world competing for the trophy. The opening match Sunday will pitch host Cameroon national team, the Indomitable Lions, against Burkina Faso at Yaoundé's Olembe Stadium. We reported earlier this week that authorities in Cameroon say that thousands of people in the country have already gotten COVID-19 vaccine and will therefore be able to attend the matches in person if they present a negative test at the stadium. Jonah Biakutaga is a sports analyst and a commentator. He joins my colleague Jackson Vunganyi by phone from Kampala to break down the group matchups. But first, he explains why AFCON 2021 is being played in 2022.
The tournament was supposed to have been played last year in 2021, but because of the COVID situation all over the globe, it was pushed to January 2022. So the tournament is being played in 2022, but it will still be called AFCON 2021. It's a little bit similar to the Euros in Europe, which is equivalent of the Africa Cup of Nations in Africa. The Euros as well were played last year in 2021, but they were called the Euros 2020 because it was slated for 2020, but because again, because of COVID, the tournament was pushed to the following year. So better late than never, we still have the tournament this year.
What kind of excitement is there on the continent about AFCON 2021?
Without doubt, this is our continental showpiece, just like Europe has a European Championship, South America has a Copa America, North America as well have got their own tournament, Asia have got the Asia Cup. So this is ours for Africa. But sadly for me, as a sports journalist looking in from the inside, if you like, or from the outside, depending on which side you are on, it's been a bit disappointing. I think for me, it was kicked off by the comments that were attributed to Jurgen Klopp, the Liverpool coach, in an interview before a Champions League game, and he said he referred to the Africa Cup of Nations as this little tournament that will be starting in Africa. And one of the Nigerian journalists, I think it was Ojora Babatunde, who picked up on it in the following press conference and asked him, listen, you owe Africa an apology. How could you refer to our continental tournament as a little tournament? Now, he tried to downplay it, Klopp, that is, and he said, listen, I don't downplay this tournament. It was just taken out of context. And then a few days later, we saw more comments from former footballers, former Arsenal players, Ian Wright and Patrick Vieira. We all know Patrick Vieira, of course, with his Senegal roots. He came out and said, listen, this tournament has got to be respected. It's as big as the Euros. And he came out and said, listen, I will not be stopping any of my players from going to the Africa Cup of Nations. There was also a small incident in Holland where Sebastian Haller, who will be playing for Ivory Coast, he's been a star player in the European Champions League, scoring 10 goals and 2 assists in 6 games. He's been one of the big players in the Champions League this season for Ajax. And he was asked by a journalist if he would be honoring the call-up for Ivory Coast. And he said, listen, why do you ask us such a question? We will be going to represent our country. So for me, the build-up has been overshadowed by what looks like a systematic attempt to downplay the significance of the Africa Cup of Nations.
Let's get into the breakdown of the groups that are going to play. How many groups are there and what are some of the teams that are in there that we should look forward to?
All right, there are 6 groups. Group A, of course, will be having the host nation, Cameroon, with Burkina Faso, Cape Verde, and Ethiopia. Group B will have Senegal, Zimbabwe, Guinea, and Malawi. A quick one on Guinea. Guinea have a new president, Dakano, President Doumbia, who overthrew the government a few months back. Okay. And he's given his team an ultimatum that they've got to go out and win the Africa Cup of Nations or come back and refund every penny that has been invested into this team.
No pressure
whatsoever. And this is a team that has Naby Keita, who plays for Liverpool. I've got Amadou Diawara, who plays for AS Roma. So it's quite a team that's decent, but for me, not good enough to win the title. So indeed, no pressure there. Then Group C has got Morocco, Ghana, Comoros, and Gabon. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang's Gabon. He's no longer Arsenal captain, but he is still captaining that Gabon team. I don't expect them to go any far in that tournament, probably as far as they could get out of the group, but I don't see them going beyond the round of 16.
Mm.
Group D has got Nigeria, has got Egypt, has got Guinea-Bissau, has got Sudan. Okay. Group E will have Algeria, Ivory Coast, Equatorial Guinea, and Sierra Leone. And then finally, Group F will have Tunisia, Mali, Mauritania, and the Gambia.
That's Jonah Biakutaga, a sports analyst and commentator. He spoke with my colleague Jackson Vunganyi by phone from Kampala, Uganda. We'd love to hear your feedback on issues in this program. We start with a listener in Uganda who writes, I would like to thank the President of the Republic of South Sudan for the wise decision he has made by appointing the best economist, Honorable Moses Makur Deng, to be the governor of the central bank as the center stage of achieving real reforms in the country. Congratulations to the citizens of South Sudan. That message is by Martin in Uganda. Sabri Isaac Hamis from Yambio, Western Equatoria State writes, Hi, VOA South Sudan in focus. To stop land grabbing in South Sudan, it seems to have defeated our government despite having formed a committee by the presidency. Still, no change. Who else will land grabbers listen to? Rule of law in this country is paralyzed due to heavy arms in the hands of everyone, including the local civil population. Forceful disarmament is what will bring change. Ayen Yak Dao in Block 9, Bor Town, has this to say about the recent attack by Sudanese pastoralists in northern Bahar Ghazal State. I totally condemn the attack on innocent and armed civilians in Awil East. Both authorities in northern Bahar Ghazal and their counterparts in Sudan need to work hand in hand 2. Bring perpetrators to book and deter further crimes and the likelihood of revenge attacks in the area. Yaba Musa from Yei River County writes, I'm very sorry if religious leaders in South Sudan are preaching violence in the church. Through fighting, what will their evil and wicked population do? Amurret from Bor Town in Jonglei State says, I hope the culture of revenge killing, political differences, economic crisis, and other kinds of barbaric acts has been buried in 2021. I'm quite optimistic that this year, 2022, will be a year full of blessings to all our families and our country at large. Isaac Tang Duck in Bentiu State writes, I would like to appreciate the decree of our president for banning all non-commissioned officers from joining politics in South Sudan, but we beg his pardon to also dismiss any military personnel from civilian positions they occupy to make the decree meaningful. Another listener starts by saying, hello VOA, I'm Peter Ajak Ayom in Block 3, Bor Town, Jonglei State. I am so saddened with the killing of 9 innocent civilians in separate attacks in Awil East by Arab Messiria. The attack is unacceptable. We need the government of South Sudan and Sudan to have a peaceful bilateral talks to bring these barbaric killings of innocent souls to an end. My sincere condolence to the deceased. Jacob Dior Machueng from Rumbek Lake State writes, the fighting that happened in the Episcopal Church of South Sudan in Aweriol County was very unfortunate because the church's theme is unity, not division. The IDP should define what brought them to Aweriol County. Robert Nyombe from Bidibidi Refugee Camp in Uganda writes, I've always been following your program for the whole of 2021, and it was nice getting what is happening in our country, South Sudan, and beyond the boundaries. May the Almighty God give much more strength to the presenters of this program. Keep up the good work. Many thanks. Mading Malwal Aluang from Malakal Town writes, 2022 marks the beginning of a new chapter, the new beginning of building a strong foundation of our nation. Our people, particularly the young generation, must embrace peace and look beyond. My advice to the two leaders, Mr. President and his vice, to reconcile the people of South Sudan. And finally, James Roy Majok from Mayom County writes, hi, John and Nabil. The daily fighting between SPLA-IO forces in Upper Nile region will affect the ongoing revitalized peace agreement. Unless Dr. Riek Machar and Simon Gatwich-Dwal, including Johnson Olin, are to be pressured by the international community to stop the ongoing fighting, there will be no peace in Upper Nile. Comments read in this segment does not reflect the views of VOA. Send your brief comments and we will sample them every Friday. That's all we prepared for you this Friday. We now end this show with Kini J and the song Corona.
Coronavirus, may marat batal. Coronavirus, may ayan khati. Coronavirus, may marat batal. Coronavirus, obiak tulna. Valiko wa aizol algas mafi ohnede kanita gioshu be arat zede kedeta baliko nefsa taki le agrab markas sehi jambu ita lenas al umon masuma al ayande yahu kini je biguna itakumbia suma fi radio wafi aye makan coronavirus se marat batal coronavirus Ayan khati coronavirus de marat batal coronavirus obiaktulnas.
We have been listening to Kini J and the song Corona. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Zamana le itakan dauru fi mahal kadir wala mesu haja kasulu idendaki besabun umata safir fi duwala lindu.